ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 1, Text 32. Katamaha api na vinaha svat panchanam purusham prati tasmat kenapi upayena manaha krishne niveshayet. Katamopi navenasyat panchanam purusham prati tasmatkena pyupayena manaha krishne niveshayet. Katamopi navenasyat panchanam purusham prati tasmati kenapyupayena manah krishne niveshayat. Katamopi navenasyat panchanam purusham prati tasmat kena pyupayena mana krishne niveshayet. Tasmat kena pyupayena mana krishne niveshayet. Katamopi navenasyat Ladies, please. Katama api anyone na not venaha the atheistic king Vena Syat would adopt Panchanam of the five previously mentioned. He's talking about processes. Purusham, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prati, in regard to. Tasmat, therefore. Kenapi, by any. Upayena, means. Manaha, the mind. Krishne, in Krishna, the Vishaye, one should fix. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Purport. Impersonalists and atheists always try to circumvent the form of Krishna. Oh, I'm sorry. Translation. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or inimically. Please repeat. Somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. Atheists like King Vena, however, being unable to think of Krishna's form in any of these five ways, cannot attain salvation. Therefore, one must somehow think of Krishna, whether in a friendly way or inimically. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Impersonalists and atheists always try to circumvent the form of Krishna. Great politicians and philosophers of the modern age even try to banish Krishna from Bhagavad Gita. They say he's really not a person. He's a symbol. That's what they like to believe. He never really existed, but he's a symbol of something else. He represents something else. A force of good. Consequently, for them, there is no salvation. But Krishna's enemies think, here is Krishna, my enemy. I have to kill him. They think of Krishna in his actual form, and thus they attain salvation. Devotees, therefore, who constantly think of Krishna's form, are certainly liberated. The only business of the Mayavadi atheists is to make Krishna formless. And consequently, because of this severe offense at the lotus feet of Krishna, they cannot expect salvation. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in this connection, Tena Shishupaladi Binha Pratikula Badvam Didishur Yena Eva Narakam Yatiti Baba, which means, except for Shishupal, those who go against the regulative principles cannot attain salvation and are surely destined for hellish life. The regulative principle is that one must always think of Krishna, whether as a friend or enemy. Omagina timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmritam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. For the past several days, we have been discussing the fact that Krishna is equal to everyone. He's equal to his friends. He's equal to his enemies. He really has no hatred toward anyone because all are his children. If he hates anything, it's the qualities that persons express or manifest which go against his plan to enlighten the living entities who are suffering in this material world and consequently increase the suffering. It is not like a loving father or a loving mother to want to see his or her children suffer more and more. And so these bad qualities that various what we call demoniac people or wicked people, evil people, manifest lust and anger and greed, envy, illusion, madness, pride, sloth, gluttony, all of these different types of qualities which bring the living entity down and cause him to be more and more covered by the material energy it's not what Krishna wants. We know that he wants something better for us. Otherwise, why would great saints like Srila Prabhupada enter this world when they don't really have to? They enter the world for no other reason than to do a service for Krishna and to do a service, of course, for the living entities who are suffering by giving them a means, by giving them a way by which they can be relieved, not temporarily or momentarily, but relieved permanently and return to their original home in the eternal world, Godhead. This is why great sages, great saints, a little more sound effect. So, this is why a great sages come into this world to enable us, to help us, to strengthen us, to direct us, and to guide us, so that in our helplessness, in our difficulty, in our tribulation, when we throw our arms up and say, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've gone here, I've gone there, nothing has helped me, I'm suffering, I'm miserable, I'm terrible, God, if there is a God, help me. And then he gives them some help. Somebody comes along, like some of you book distributors, and you come and you put a book in their hand. And they look at it, and then not only that, but the distributor tells them that this actually has the solution to all the different problems and difficulties and miseries of material life. He says, well, I got plenty of problems. Well, it's right here. And he opens it up and shows him here, shows him this, shows him that. He says, well, that looks interesting. That looks good. Takes it home and begins reading it, can put it down. And the next day he's at the temple asking, I want to join. This is what I need. I want freedom. I want peace. I want strength. I want joy. I have none of that now. So that's why these books are just being distributed far and wide and will continue to be distributed so that persons who are suffering in this material world have an exit from that, and they can actually not only be relieved, but ultimately be freed from this terrible scourge. Now, in the beginning of the translation, it's mentioned here, somehow or other, one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. So I would like to talk a little about those processes so that we understand the different processes. We respect all the different processes, and we can also understand what process we must be pursuing in order to reach higher processes, if that so be, and if not, how we can even stay in the process that we are all practicing. So there are five different kinds, different processes by which one can attain God realization. One is called Shantaras, or neutrality, or loving God in awe and reverence. God is great. God is glorious. God is magnificent. God is all-powerful. It's a reverence for his greatness, a reverence for his immenseness. It's not a very personal type of relationship, although the heart is definitely involved. But it's a recognition. It's of his awesomeness and how wonderful and how powerful he is. And we see some of the great sages, such as the four Kumaras. They worshipped and glorified the Lord in the Shantaras, and so did Shukdev Goswami. And there are some others as well. So that's one way. You walk outside and you see the greatness, for example, of the sky, or at night you see all the thousands, if not millions, of stars scattered all around the darkness and blinking, and you can only say, only a person with vast, immense, incredible intelligence can have created this. And so it brings a sense of awe to your heart. Wow, I can hardly build anything. And look, Krishna, you know, God, or whoever has built all of this, these sun, moon, stars, here, everywhere. And the result is that it's amazing. And how the moon is controlling the tides, and how vegetation is affected by the sunshine, and how the wind is blowing in certain ways. And also one sees the more devastated aspect of the power of God. And when we see hurricanes, we see turbulence, we see tornadoes, tsunamis. All this is the power of God, and one actually who has any smallest intelligence steps back and says, wow, that's power. And if you've ever seen the pictures of the tsunamis, it's absolutely amazing. It's awesome. It cannot be stopped. You can't push it back unless you're Krishna, and he's pushing it forward. So therefore, he's giving everyone their particular karma, which they have earned for themselves in previous lives or even in this life. So that is Shanta Ras. It also has a certain amount of emotion, but not as much emotion as the following types of rasas that a devotee may manifest. Now, we, in our infant stage of devotional activity, try to perfect ourselves in that initial rasa. If we have a higher rasa, which we are going to go to, we can't get to that until we first achieve perfection in the lower rasas. Sometimes I see devotees saying, well, look, I know I'm a cowherd girl. I know I'm a cowherd boy, so don't tell me I have to go awe and reverence and doing all this bowing. You know, I can call Krishna by his first name. I can call him, I can say, hey, Yadava, come here. I can do that because I have an intimate relationship with Krishna. So this is all mental concoction and mental delusions. Sometimes people would speak like that to Srila Prabhupada, and he would say, don't worry about it. You'll get over it. You'll get over it. Don't worry about it. So, in other words, that they were deluded. That's in effect what he was saying. So this is something that Prabhupada would say, because when you read in the Krishna book, when the cowherd boys, the little boys, they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, they're playing with Krishna, it's mentioned in the narration that these boys spent millions of years performing transcendental pious activities so that they could eventually have a close, intimate, dear, near relationship with Krishna. And now they finally had it. Millions of years. So one has to ask himself, well, how much time have I spent on this? Actually, the person steps back and say, I'm glad that I even got this awe and reverence. The very fact that I can revere Krishna, I can honor Krishna, I can glorify him, I can bow down to Krishna, I can beg Krishna for his mercy to purify me, to help me, to guide me, to direct me. The very fact that I can do that, that in itself is great, let alone have those intimate, close, near and dear relationships. So, a devotee who is intelligent does not try to jump to higher rasas. That's another expression of false ego. As we know, the false ego is the identification of the soul with the body. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end with that identification. It extends further, because with that body, or from that body, we try to lord it over this material world and feel like a lord. We've come into this world to experience or taste what it's like to be a lord. A master. A controller. A manipulator. A purusha. And to some extent, we're all purushas to some greater or lesser degree. And on a very temporary basis, of course. So we've come here to taste what it's like to be a lord, to be a Krishna. And in the process, of course, Maya helps us to forget Krishna. Because if I know there's somebody more powerful, greater, higher, better than I, then what's the whole point? I want to be top dog. I want to be the kingpin. So if I want to be king, then I have to forget Krishna and try to enable or do whatever I have to have people honor me, glorify me, look up to me, applaud me, bow down to me, do all these things that will make me feel so great, such as you have presidents and prime ministers, you have senators, you have members of the House of Representatives, council members, you have the CEOs of major multinational corporations. They have a very great sense of power, and they have prestige. Everyone in the company just practically bows down to them. Everyone addresses them Mr. So-and-so or Miss So-and-so. There's this feeling of power. But little do they know that in due course of time, it's all going to disappear. And they're going to find out that their power is no greater than the power of the worm that they may have stepped on this morning as they walked out of their house. Truly. For a few days, a few years, for many years, one may feel very great, very powerful, very strong, but that it doesn't last. And as it goes away, one begins to experience tremendous amounts of suffering, sorrow, and misery. How? Well, when the very quality, which is power, begins to ebb, begins to recede, go away, that very quality which gave meaning and value and purpose and direction of my life is going away. Then what do I got? Eventually you become weak, enfeebled, incapable. Your memory starts to fail you. Your knees start to buckle. Your eyes fill up with bags under them. You start to get itches here and there. You get older, and all of these different difficulties of the body and the mind and the intelligence begin to kick in. You can't solve problems the way you used to. You feel incapable. You feel inferior. All your life you've been feeling superior. A-plus student, 2 PhDs, business administration, master of this, that. And now you've lost it all. It's gone. What a horrible feeling. You feel like you have nothing. So that's why Srila Prabhupada comes to enable us so that we can really get something and not have to live for these bubbles that slowly but surely pop and then are gone. Another form of, or another process of devotional service is known as the Dasya Bhav. Dasya, as we all know, Das, all of us have Das at the end of our names. It means servant. So servitorship is another form of serving the Lord and reaching perfection. We have very good examples of this in the great devotee who served Lord Ramchandra, Hanuman, who's called the Monkey King. And he did very wonderful service for the Lord, in that the Lord's wife Sita was kidnapped by a demoniac personality called Ravana, and he kept her on his island, Lanka, and he kept her there because he wanted to marry her. Actually, he could have just taken her and raped her if he wanted to do that. He could have at least tried to. She could have cursed him. She had all the power. But the point is this, he wanted, his ego was so great that he wanted to feel that he could make her love him more than Lord Ramchandra. Just see the ego of this madman. Yeah, yeah, and then he could go and look at Lord Ramachandra and say, she never really loved you. When she saw a real man, then she fell in love. This is what he wanted, this false position that I'm better than him. And he was encouraging her. He would come and visit her in the Ashok forest, and he would say to her, forget Ram, he's nothing. He's just like a vagrant wandering through the forest. I'm a king. I can give you everything and everything. I'll make you my top-notch queen. So she refused. Anyway, the important point on this is that Hanuman was sent by Lord Ramchandra to try and find Sita, and he had to leap over the Bay of Bengal to reach Lanka, which he did, and he finally found her. And he even offered to put her on his back. He could expand himself tremendously. He had the power of being larger than the largest or smaller than the smallest. But she refused. She said, no, my husband, his duty to rescue me. And you just tell him where I am, and that will be fine. And that's exactly, of course, what happened. So Hanuman always had in his mind that I am the servant, and Ram is my master. I am small. I am insignificant. I am worthless. Whatever power I am manifesting or showing or expressing, such as being larger than the largest or smaller than the smallest, that is due to my master's mercy. I could never do this without his mercy. And he would always take shelter mentally of Lord Ramachandra before he embarked upon any type of activity. So, therefore, he is a very good example. And we, all of us, have to perfect this particular type of rasa before we can ever go on to any other rasa, if we are to go on to any other. Awe and reverence must be perfected. We must have this sense of the glory and the greatness and majesty of God. And we also have to have this sense of servitorship, that I am small, I am insignificant, I am low, and my master, my spiritual master, the Supreme Lord, are so great. And we have to be ready to surrender to them totally. This is what Krishna wants. He wants not partial surrender. He wants total surrender. And what is total surrender? Are we ready to give up our lives at the order of Krishna? We have to ask ourselves this question. Or what are we willing to give up? It doesn't mean that because you may not be courageous enough or powerful enough to give up your life at this point in time. Maybe you have some more material desires that you haven't fulfilled, and you just don't want to do that. Just as the sons of King Yayati, they didn't want to give up their youth for their father, who was cursed. He was cursed to become an old man prematurely. And the only way he could get out of that is if one of his five sons would give up his youth. And none of them were willing to give that up except Puru. And Puru took the old age and the father took the youth. But he found out after thousands of years that it was a big waste of time. that the more he enjoyed, the more he wanted to enjoy, the more he wanted to enjoy, the more he felt enslaved by enjoyment. And a slave can never be happy. He feels badgered. Do it more, more, do it more. There's not a moment of peace. He's restless, constantly wondering whether the pleasure that he wants will be there tonight, this morning. It's an obsession. This is what keeps him going, the fulfillment of that obsession that he has. So we are to perfect ourselves in servitorship, and we have many opportunities. That's why we do all the bowing down. We bow to Srila Prabhupada. Devotees bow to one another. This is to develop humility. In fact, humility is called the source or the mother of all virtues. Unless you have humility, there is no such thing as self-realization. It's impossible. Unless, of course, you fall into this category, which we've been reading about, where a person hates the Lord with such intensity that as a result of focusing and fixing his attention on the Lord in animosity, he's got so much anger and so much emotion tied into this that he becomes purified in the process, and then he is sent, as Kamsa was sent, he got Salokya perfection. Living in the same planet as the Supreme Lord. He's also mentioned that he also had Sarupya, having the same form of the Lord. So when you have the same form of the Lord, you also get the feelings of all the great devotees who have the same form of the Lord. But this is rare. And Srila Prabhupada says that don't become an enemy of the Lord. Most likely you'll end up going down to hell. You're not going to go back to Godhead. Unless you really can hate him with all your heart and soul and mind, as Shishupal did, Dantavakra did, and Kamsa did. They didn't mildly hate the Lord. They intensely hated them. They venomously hated them. And so much emotion, so to such an extent that every day when they'd wake up, I've got to kill that Krishna. You know, Krishna must die. You see, this was their mentality. So, therefore, they became purified ultimately, and they did go back to Godhead. So, therefore, we all have to perfect ourselves in this humility. It doesn't come easy. It means swallowing one's false ego. The process is surrender. And how do we surrender? Accept whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service. Reject whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service. Believe firmly that the Lord will always protect his devotee. Always feel dependent upon the Lord. Have no separate interests outside of or except the interests of God. And always be what? Meek and humble. So important, because meekness and humility attract the Supreme Lord. It means we're no longer a competitor of Krishna. As soon as we bow down to Krishna truly from the heart, We surrender. In a war, if you come up with your arms up or you raise a white flag, I surrender. It means I give up my will to do whatever you want me to do. This is what surrender is all about. Therefore, servitorship is where we have to focus. If we have a higher rasa with Krishna, then Krishna, it's not you decide this, that I have a higher rasa. I'm a gopi, and I'm going to act like a gopi, like some of the sahajas, and that's what they're called in India. And then they start putting, what we call here going in drag. What they put on the lipstick, they put on the female, their hair, they put makeup on, and eyeshadow, and the whole works. And then they even talk like girls, you know, they start talking, so they feel like they're girls. This is all a concoction. It's all made up. It's to imagine that you're on the highest platform. That's what everybody is trying to do. I want to imagine a person goes to a baseball game, you know, he has a favorite player, you know, and a favorite player, he's always spitting. So the admirer starts spitting every 2 seconds. You see these four players, they always spit before they move the bats, or especially the pitchers. So therefore, if I want to be great, I have to spit like my hero. Like that's really going to help me become a better human being. So the point is this, is that we need to perfect ourselves in this. And when if we are really gopis, it will be revealed. It will be revealed in the heart by Krishna. He will let you know. He will be satisfied. He will be pleased with your service. He will feel great, intense affection for you and want to bring you into a closer, more emotionally intimate relationship with him. This is Krishna's call. It's not ours. There's no harm in desiring this. There's no harm in aspiring for this because this is great. Why not aspire for the highest, but leave it to the spiritual master and leave it to Krishna to decide how and where and when that will happen, if in fact it ever will happen. You may stay in as a servant for forever, and we should not minimize that, because a servant also feels ecstasy. The difference between a servant feeling ecstasy and a gopi feeling ecstasy is one of degree. That's all. Going to the next rasa, which is known as Sakyabhav, S-A-K-H-Y-A, Sakyabhav is the bhava or the attitude that Krishna is my friend and that I am his friend. And friends don't stand on ceremony. They're friends. They greet each other. Hey, how's it going? What's happening? One guy gives his friend a little punch in the stomach or says some snide remarks. But it's all done in fun. It's done in play. So Krishna and Arjuna had this kind of relationship. They would wrestle together. They would play together. They would talk about, they would go hunting together. They would shoot arrows together. They would laugh. They would joke. It was completely on an equal level. And that's what Krishna wanted. Because it wasn't that Arjuna was being presumptuous by acting that way. Krishna wanted him to act that way. He had earned the right to act that way. That's a form of service to Krishna. When Krishna wants to have someone to play with, someone he can chum with, or someone he can be a buddy with. Because he's always got everybody bowing down and glorifying him and adoring him, looking up to him. But he wants to taste the other too. So Arjuna satisfied that very much. Now there's another kind of friendship, and that is the friendship, that's a more mature type of friendship that I just mentioned. Then there's the immature friendship of the little cowherd boys. And they were even more on an equal level with Krishna. They would duel with Krishna with sticks. And then if one of the cowherd boys they was able to hit Krishna with the stick, then Krishna had to carry that cowherd boy on his back. And then as Krishna carried the cowherd boy on his back, the little cowherd boy was like, come on, get going, get faster, giddy up, you know. He would treat him like he was just like a little horse. The Supreme Lord, who's holding up all universes, is now holding up this little cowherd boy who's whipping him and telling him to giddy up, giddy up. The irony is just amazing. And Krishna loves this. He's enjoying this. He knows who he is. But on the other hand, it gives him a chance to forget who he is, how great, how high, how immense, and how wonderful. So Krishna enjoys and relishes his activities with these cowherd boys. You know, they go running after birds. They go to the monkeys and they pull the tails. They make faces at the monkeys. They jump into the ponds and they try to grab the frogs, and the frogs escape. This is all play. They play blind man's buff, and they also play what do they call that with the bulls? What do they call that? But anyway, they act. One acts like the matador, and the other one acts like a bull, and he waves his cape and so forth. So they're playing like children, which is, of course, they are children, and they're having lots of fun. They're laughing, they're joking, and that's the nature of having that incredible, amazing talk about awe that one can have such a close and intimate and dear relationship with the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, has all opulences of beauty and wealth and strength and fame and renunciation and knowledge. He has everything. And these little boys are just playing with him, pulling his hair, getting on his back, and so forth. Another opulent, another rasa is Vatsalya. In the Vatsalya rasa, we have even more intimacy, and I'll explain. Vatsalya is parental feeling. Parental feeling is one of protection. Now, we know that Krishna was, when he was young, he was always being threatened by one demon or another. Putana, she grabbed him and she wanted to poison him. And then came Trinavrata. And then Bakasura came. And then Agasura came. One demon after another were threatening the life of Krishna. And remember that Yashoda and Nanda were seeing Krishna as their own little son. They were not seeing him as the great Supreme Lord of the universe. He was their son, and it was their duty as parents to protect him. And that's what they wanted to do. So they were always in anxiety. They were always uncertain. Krishna would go out to the pasturing grounds with his friends, and then they would be worrying, maybe there's some demon who's going to catch him, is going to try to kill him. Will God protect him? God has been protecting him, but will he always protect him? So they had this desire to protect Krishna, and they had intense feelings of affection for Krishna. Just as any son of you who may be mothers, you know that you have a very strong affection, or you know your mother had a very strong affection perhaps for you. This parental feeling is very intense, is very great, and as a result, one feels a very close, intimate presence with Krishna. In other words, Mother Yashoda was thinking, she was worrying, when it was time for Krishna to come home, would he come home? And then the last form is Madhurya Ras. And there are two kinds of Madhurya Ras. And the one kind of Madhurya Ras is that kind in which Krishna is married. It's called the conjugal relationship. Krishna is married, such as to Rukmini, and such as to Satyabhama, and such as to Jambavati, and some of his many wives. Actually, he has 16,108 wives. And he has a marital relationship with these women. And these are all actually devotees who prayed at some point in the past to have Krishna as their husband. And he fulfilled that desire. So that's one form. And then there's another form of the unmarried girls, such as you might call it the romantic type, where the woman is single, but she considers, or she might even be married, but she considers that Krishna is her real and only husband. Because she can't get him out of her mind. She can't get him out of her heart. All she wants to do is think about Krishna, and without any difficulty, whether she's milking the cows or churning the milk or the yogurt, she's always got Krishna on her mind. So as a result of that, they all really wanted to be married to Krishna. And in order to be married to Krishna, generally speaking, there's some form of touching, some form of intimacy. So Krishna gave them that in the Ras Lila. And in the Ras Lila, Krishna, of course, put his arms around them. And they danced in a circle. And in dancing, having his arms around them, they were in ecstasy, as never before. And they would have these Ras Leelas quite often. And the gopis' love continued to increase and increase and increase. And then what happened is when Krishna left Vrindavan and he went to Mathura, it was love and separation, which is even more intense than love in meeting. The one whom you love, the one whom you care about, the one who you want to be with is no longer with you, and you can't be with him. If you've ever been in love and your beloved is somewhere away, like he might be in the service, armed services, and you can't be with the person, and you're wondering, will I ever come home? There's so much grief in one's heart. It's just love and separation. So therefore, the important point here is that in the Madhurya Ras, whether it's a conjugal, that you're married to Krishna, or whether you're Krishna's girlfriend, the important point is that the emotional intensity is so great, is so high, is so amazing, that as a result, they cannot forget Krishna. They're always remembering Krishna. And as a result, ultimately, they will go back to Krishna when they leave this particular, this planet. Because they are really the devotees, the eternal devotees. Many are nitya siddhas, eternal servants of Krishna. And some have been promoted in this world to be on that level of eternal, because now they can no longer think of anyone and anything except Krishna. So we are all the devotees and are of Krishna, and our business is to simply try to become perfect in our service. And if we become perfect in our service, we should attribute all the glory or all the perfection to the mercy of the spiritual master and the mercy of Krishna. When we attribute that, then we become free of the false prestige, the honor, the glory that I did it, and therefore I am superior, I'm greater, I'm higher. You get free of all of that, and you always feel that Krishna did it, he was in charge, and by depending upon him, and him alone, along with my spiritual master, then we lose our material desires, and in turn, we have only one desire, and that's to serve Krishna forever. May we all have that one desire. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Thank you. Now I'm awed. So are there any questions or any comments anyone would like to make? No? Nothing? Have a great prasadam. Hare Krishna.